This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today, I'm delighted to have in the studio with me the folk singer Eliza Gilkison, whose two most recent and increasingly political albums are Land of Milk and Honey and Paradise Hotel. Eliza Gilkison, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thanks, Matt.
Why increasingly political?
Oh, you know, if anybody knew my music before the last two records, I think they would have seen I was very kind of, you know, occupied with my own dramas. But, you know, as I've gotten older and you know things are bad when someone like me actually becomes political, you know, because I really was living, you know, sort of back to the land hippie lifestyle. I really wasn't that involved with politics. But I think things are happening now that have everything to do with my ideals, my hopes and dreams for this country, for the world. I mean, I am an old hippie in a lot of ways, so I think I've always had a sort of a vision that was precious to me, and I have felt that I feel that the current regime's policies threaten that to the core. And I have kids, I have grandkids. I didn't want to sit on the sidelines during this time. I didn't want to look back on this time period and think that for all the dreams I had that I just sat on the sideline and said nothing.
There are a lot of musicians who oddly are sitting on the sidelines. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, there are a number of things at stake there. One, I mean, it's not like you're going to get a buttload of airplay by singing political songs. I mean, that's the other thing is I think people don't like message music. I mean, and I don't even like message music. It's kind of a turnoff. So, you know, you have to dig into something deeper than a message. You have to convey the sense of your own edge and your own awareness. It has to convey into music. You can't just come out with a ditty and expect it to fly in music. There's a lot of cynicism in the listenership of music. There's a lot to choose from, where you know that's valid and certainly entertaining. So the competition is steep. It's not, I think, in a cynical world, coming out with some, you can't come out with some flowery little message, you know. It would be scoffed at, and it's not commercial. And really, we're looking at record companies and markets where, you know, a song has to really sell.
Mm-hmm. And where do you find your audience?
Well, I was wondering if you could give me a job. you know, actually, it's been amazing because of the lack of it, and there are so many of us who are trying to find music that speaks how we feel, that represents how we feel, which we're angry, we're upset, we're frightened. So, you know, I think it's been amazingly, it's an underground phenomenon is what's been happening. So I'm glad for that. I wish there were more avenues, but, you know, I'm just grateful that there still are places where this kind of music can be played on radio, and that there's still press that's interested.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. My guest today is the folk singer Eliza Gilkison. Now, your music does really get at that and represent that anger that a lot of us feel toward this crazy Bush administration and their war policy that seems so out of control and so duplicitous. I caught up with it in Highway 9, the song on the album before, Land of Milk and Honey, where you talk about Bush and the chicken hawks and the neocons and being in Iraq for OIL, as you spelled it out, something we weren't supposed to talk about at all, oil. Mm-hmm. God forbid people admit the truth that the United States is there for oil. Did your fans who were used to you being not quite as explicit react badly to that?
I still get mail from ex-fans who say, you know, stick to the dysfunctional love songs. But I'm, you know, I've even at my website, I've said, you know, I look forward to the day when I can go back to my own personal dramas, you know. I really do. I'd love to be so self-absorbed, but I don't think there's time. I think everyone needs to be involved. I'm concerned, so.
And I'm sure you brought a lot of them along with you as well. And a lot of them probably, yeah, if they were awake, were sharing some of that anger. And part of your music is to awaken people.
Well, I've been thinking about that. What is my goal here, you know, and because I don't like hate mail, and I don't like being threatened, and it does kind of shake me. As a woman, it's very violent, and I don't like it directed at me, but
it's probably very sexist too, because some of my female colleagues get really sexist hate
it's
mail.
It's disgusting, a lot of it. But, you know, why don't you just sing your pretty little head off and, you know, quit the rest of this stuff? But and that's the nice ones. But I want to rally our troops. I think we're still rudderless, and I'm not blaming anybody for that, because I think that we're in unknown turf right now. I think a lot of us are, as we dig deeper into what's wrong with the Bush regime, we're finding out that this is not, a lot of these things have occurred on Democrats' watches as well, and that really the sickness is so deep, so insidious, that what we're going to have to do to get ourselves out of here is first to take inventory, which is frightening in itself, because as you dig deeper and deeper into the information, you become more aware of how insidious it is. And then to figure out a way out in a time, I think it's an unknown. We're in the unknown now, and a track out of here is going to be very difficult. I think music has a way of rallying people. I think it has a way of bringing them together, accessing parts of themselves that may be necessary in the days to come.
And you have an anthem that rallies the troops, it seems to me, if we can use that military metaphor again. I mean, your classic song on this latest album, Paradise Hotel, the song Man of God, is as strong and explicit an anti-war song I've heard in a long, long time. Do you mind taking a crack at that?
Sure.
Well, a cowboy came from out of the west with his snakeskin boots and his bulletproof vest. Gang of goons and his big war chest. Fortunate son, he was doubly blessed. Corporate cronies and the chiefs of staff bowing to the image of the golden calf. Starting up wars in the name of God's son. Gonna blow us all the way to kingdom come. Man of God, that ain't the teachings of a man of God. Man of God, man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man of God. Coalition of the fearful and judgmental, patricians, politicians, and the fundamentalists. Never have to tell them how the money's spent. Never have to tell them where their freedom went. Homophobes in the high command, waiting for the rapture like it's Disneyland. Hide all the bodies from out of view. Channel all the treasure to the chosen few. Man of God, that ain't the teachings of a man of God. Man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man of God. If I could, I surely would stand on the rock where Moses stood. Look out, people, now we're gonna get fleeced by a wolf masquerading as a man of peace. blessed are meek. Jesus said, yeah, turn the other cheek. Jesus said, help the poor and the weak. If he lived today, he'd be a radical freak. All the money changers will be out on the street, weeping and wailing and gnashing their teeth. Me, I'm waiting on the reckoning day when the whole world gonna rise up and say, man of God, that ain't the teachings of a man of God. Man of God, man of God, that ain't the preachings of a man of God.
That's Eliza Gilkison singing her anthem, Man of God, from her latest album, Paradise Hotel, one of the best anti-war, anti-Bush songs that I've heard. In a sense, you know, part of the world is rising up to this false man of God. Are you seeing that happen around the world?
I think there's an awareness. I just don't sense a unity right now. Maybe things have to get worse in order for people to have more of a passion around it. But definitely the information, I think the thing that makes us different than other historical times when fascist regimes came into power so quickly and easily, we do have the internet, and I think that is the single most powerful difference between this time and other times. But so I'm excited. I'm guardedly hopeful about our ability to communicate with each other, and I think that gives us a strength in our unity, because I think in the past people were isolated and they were made to feel that they didn't love God and country, as we are being, you know, told here as well.
How do you react to that when people say you're unpatriotic or...
It just makes me so angry. I don't like to be manipulated. I don't like to be told. It's a freedom, you know, to choose your God and the things you love and the things you're passionate about. Those are so personal. And to be told what I am and am not makes me very angry. And, I mean, I feel lucky that we live in a country where I can feel that anger and I can still express it. But I think these are resistance is a muscle that needs to be worked, or it will atrophy. And I worry about that. I still don't think we know yet how to organize ourselves and become a movement.
And some of the American public is... it's kind of flabby with that muscle. Of course, we're kind of flabby, period. But
yeah, we are. You know, I'm flabby.
But, you know, what's it going to take here in the United States to get more people to wake up? I mean, obviously, Bush's popularity has been sinking, and so some people are waking up to some extent. But there's a difference between, you know, recognizing in some passive way that this guy is manipulating us and lying to us and taking us to war for no good reason, and then, you know, getting up and doing something about it.
Yeah, I think even as people feel the Bush regime going down, they're already getting ready to go back to sleep, you know. I mean, and that would be a big mistake. You know, things are set into motion now that if they are not curbed and stopped and turned around, they're still going to be devastating, regardless of whether the Bush regime stays in power. But, I mean, I really think community activism is where it starts. I think people need to look into their own communities, and it's not just enough anymore to work on yourself, you know. That was a common belief, I think, that I certainly shared, that, you know, I'm going to be a good person in my daily life, so that's, you know, and that I'm doing the good work. But I think it takes more than that. I think we actually do need to. Every community has, you know, liberal activist organizations that are the probably the backbone of each community in terms of resistance.
Eliza Gilkison, the song Man of God, you are so outraged by the false piety that Bush and his people are espousing. And there is this aspect in this country of right-wing fundamentalism that can be so scary, because there seems to be a lack of respect for basic democratic principles, divisions of church and state. And yet, part of me thinks we need to have conversations with right-wing fundamentalists and try, if there's an opening there, to have them realize that, well, maybe Bush, maybe Bushism, maybe American empire to really draw at large isn't the way to go. But I'm not quite sure how to start that dialogue.
I don't know that there is dialogue. It's like, you know, people that know they're right, then nobody's talking anybody into anything.
Know the truth with a capital T.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that people who care about everybody having their own opinions about who and what they want to worship, hopefully there are more of them. I mean, I don't know what kind of dialogue can be had. I don't know what kind of agreements. Because we are, you know, you're either on board that ship or you're you know, spawn of Satan.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm a spawn of Satan here. Matt Rothschild with Progressive Radio. I want to get back to what you were talking about before a little bit, Eliza Gilkison, which is the role that music and art can play. In one interview, you said it can uncover our compassion. In an interview you did with Robert Jensen for The Progressive, you said art can de-anesthetize us, which I thought was a beautiful word, which is rarely used, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Well, I just think that with a barrage of information and sort of the denial that you have to almost exist within in order to function in this world right now, I think we're very shut down. I think that's just the nature of most human beings. I think you have to make great effort not to be shut down right now and anesthetize yourself in one form or another. And I think art is has a way of reaching into the places where you've got big walls and touching those places in a safe way. It almost gives you permission to access parts of yourself that you've walled off. I mean, in the article I said, I think it, you know, at the risk of sounding arrogant, because I don't know that art can change the world, but I do think it can help people touch places in themselves that are sensitive or not sensitive enough.
So, and I'm hoping it can change the world, too. So.
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad you have a dream about that. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be out here if I didn't hope for that myself.
I hope journalism can do it to some extent, too, or just this talking. But, yeah. I mean, I think we do need dialogue, and we need also to challenge each other. And one thing that I like about your music is it does challenge conceptually. I was thinking of the song Tender Mercies, for instance, which is from Land of Milk and Honey, which starts with a description of a woman who straps a belt of explosives. She's a suicide bomber. Mm-hmm. That was a huge risk, it seemed to me, for you to take. What were you trying to do there?
Well, that's interesting you would bring that line up, because I wrote the song and I wrote it around that. Across the world, she tapes explosives to her chest and steps into a shopping mall. That's not exactly like a fun line to sing, you know. It doesn't sing, actually. And I kept going back to it, you know, as an opening line that's like a slap in the face right when you start. I kept going back to it and thinking, I've got to soften this down. It's too heavy an image to start a song with, but... I ended up, you know, building the whole song around it, because it was a violent image and it was a disturbing image. And it actually, I got a lot of mail around it, too, because people were saying that I was not condoning suicide bombing, supportive of suicide bombing, which was not at all the point. But I felt the image had to stand. And sometimes I will use a shocking image just to get people's attention. But that song is actually about finding that the common things that every parent has with every other parent in this world. If we can't tap into things like what parenting means to every mother and father, that we all want the same things for our children. None of us would want someone to come into our country and blow up our homes in the name of some god and, you know, some foreign concept, you know, of how we're supposed to live our lives. I mean, how would we respond if our children were brutally murdered like that, or collapsed in a home? How can we understand who they are? How can we heal our relationships with them if we can't see them as mothers and fathers of children who want only the best for their children?
And Eliza Gilkison, there's such an effort by the Bush administration, by the right-wing culture in this country, to actually completely disguise the fact that there are other human beings and mothers mm-hmm. and children in other cultures in Iraq, mm-hmm. for instance, or on the West Bank and in Gaza, mm-hmm. and that we should just see them. Well, for a while, there was like we should see everyone in Iraq with a mustache and
we've demonized them.
Name Saddam Hussein, yeah.
Yeah, we've demonized them. And that's why I wanted that image of okay, this suicide bomber is actually a young girl who probably the quality of her life is so it has dropped to the point now where she didn't care about her life anymore. Somewhere in there was an adolescent who dreamed of boyfriends and I mean, you know, having children, raising family, and somewhere there are the parents of those children, even those parents we have to understand, we have to have compassion for.
And you say in the song that if in a world where there's no mercy, I mean, this is essentially what happens.
If we have no quality of life, we have nothing to live for, nothing to dream for, we will strap a bomb to our chest.
That is really a frightening image, and it's a universal one, too, unfortunately, that people are forced by circumstance or ideology, for that matter, or religious indoctrination to take those kinds of steps. Another song that was kind of daring was the song you had about the battered and sexually abused woman who ended up murdering someone. That was a ballad. and how do you find the material for this? What gets you to pick up a song like that or a theme like that?
I was just in an airport and I picked up Yvonne Johnson's book, The Stolen Life, and it just made my hair stand up. I just couldn't believe that a woman could endure that level of abuse in her home and that her life was her life was destroyed from the age 3 to finally when she ended up going into prison for murdering someone who she thought was threatening her own children and was apparently threatening to take those children away and abuse them. And so it just she was, of course, in an alcoholic stupor. And in her book, she doesn't make any excuses for her behavior. She was put in prison for a life sentence because she murdered someone. But when you see it in context of her story and you see the rehabilitation that occurred around it, and someone who is now 42 has been in prison in Edmonton since she's 27, you see where the pattern of abuse, how it led to this. And there's a part of me that wishes for Yvonne to know what it is to be free in the world. Sober and free, and she is rehabilitated, and she deserves that chance. I think she's actually up for, in Canada, they have a 15-year parole review, and she is up this year. And
so they don't have a life sentence mandatory in Canada?
When you have a life sentence, you get a 15-year, everyone gets a 15-year review, and hers is up this year. She just went through the preliminary for that review and is qualified, and so now she is, in January, is up for review. I actually visited the prison this summer.
Did you meet her?
Yes. We put on a show in the prison. I took my son, who plays with me, and my guitar player, and we went in and did a show in the Edmonton Women's Prison and got to meet Yvonne. She actually helped us sponsor the event.
That must have been intense.
It was wonderful. It was actually the warden up there, Peggy Sue Hamilton, is an amazing woman and doing very innovative things in that prison. And she's very beloved of the inmates because she's really taking chances. And she and Yvonne put this show together, and it was exciting to meet Yvonne and also to really see that she, you know, how far she's come and understanding what happened.
I'm speaking with a folk singer, Eliza Gilkison. It's crazy that our prison system isn't as humane as that up in Canada. We only have time, I'm afraid, for one more song. Eliza Gilkison, I loved this song, Calm Before the Storm, on your latest album, Paradise Hotel, because I found it so soothing on the backside of Man of God. And so I was hoping you could close with that. Would that be all right?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I did sort of feel like we were in a, when I wrote it, I was sort of recognizing that we were in this lull, and I was sort of imagining the Austin audience, which is just so, these audiences that come to my shows, a lot of times there's such a sense of community there, and that solidarity of community is really, I think, what a lot of us are going to be drawing on in the times to come.
easy does it, darling. Let the good times roam. Many a mile to go before you close your eyes and rest your weary soul. Say, the dark clouds form. No one knows what will come after here tonight in the calm before the storm. I can't dance this one without you, so stay inside here where it's warm and gather all your friends about you here tonight in the calm before the storm. And even when the winds assail you and you're lost out on uncharted seas, the compass of your heart won't fail you now. Your vessel's made for times like these. So easy does it, darling. Let your hair down till the morn. Cause many loved ones are together here tonight in the calm before the storm, in the calm before the storm.
That's Eliza Gilkison singing Calm Before the Storm, which is on her latest album, Paradise Hotel. Eliza is a beautiful, soothing, comforting, around the campfire kind of song. Tell my listeners where people can get a hold of your album or go to your website and find out more about you.
Sure, they can go to ElizaGilkison.com. It's a spelling nightmare, but when in desperation, they can go to redhouserecords.com. There's a link to my website.
That's Gilkison, G-I-L-K-Y-S-O-N, Gilkison. Eliza Gilkison, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.